Ashlyn Dorgan. Now stay tuned for the Brain Labor Report.
It's Wednesday, December 18, 2013. You're listening to the Brain Labor Report.
Listen up. We've got a war zone here today right in our heartland. And across the USA, these multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. But they've declared a war on us. Fight back, it's up to you. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. Going to work could be the death of you and me, but we're not unarmed. Our weapon solidarity, Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood, the list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. When they boost your copay,
war on the workers.
Don't you know what to say?
War on the workers.
When they talk privatization,
war on the workers.
And cooperation,
war on the workers.
When they call you a team,
war on the workers.
You better learn how to scream.
War on the workers.
Oh, that's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, flexibility.
War on the workers.
Every worker stiff can see.
War on the workers.
Now when they poison your water.
War on the workers.
Don't go like lambs to the slaughter.
War on the workers.
And when they foul up the air.
War on the workers.
You gotta show that you care.
War on the workers.
When they talk WTO.
War on the workers.
You best be screaming hell no.
War on the workers.
It's a war on child labor protection. It's a war on the 8-hour day. It's a war on occupational health and safety. It's a war on social security. Now thanks to WTO, GATT, NAFTA, MAI, the IMF, and the World Bank, it's a worldwide war. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Yeah, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time, sisters and brothers, you know it's time right now. I said it's time we started calling the shots.
Okay, just about time we started calling the shots. Good morning. You're listening to the Brain Labor Report. This is Wes Brain. I'm host of the show.
This is Jason Houck. I'm the engineer.
Coming to you on another cold December. The next time we do the show, let's see, Jason, next Wednesday is Christmas. We're going to play an archive show for Christmas. We're not coming in here that morning. But it stands true what I was going to say. The next show of the Brain Labor Report, the days are going to be getting longer. That's what I was thinking. It's the cold of winter will be past us, and the days of lightness will expand. We want to see some lightness expand for working people in this country. Brain Labor reports about the huge gulf between those who have the 1% and those who don't, the 99%. That's most of us. Times are tough. They really, really are. We concentrate on the issues of the day that really focus on the big divide. Public employees are under attack. Workers in general are under attack. Had a pretty good meeting last evening with Citizens for Peace and Justice. They had a celebration in the library over in Medford, and we started talking a little bit about the United States Postal Service. I was surprised that most of the people there in the room, not all that surprised, did not know that there's a couple of different unions, folks who work for the Postal Service. Most people actually don't realize this. In fact, when it comes down to it, most people don't know very much about one of our most successful institutions, the United States Postal Service. We're going to be focusing on the U.S. Postal Service today. Going to have a couple of guests in our studio, letter carriers here in Medford, Oregon. Going to be talking about what's going on with the United States Postal Service. Always near the top of our hour-long show, we bring you the Workers Independent News out of Madison, Wisconsin. You won't hear this anywhere else in Southern Oregon except for right here on KSKQ, your community radio station. So, for Wednesday, December 18th, 2013, here's the Workers Independent News.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. UAW Region 1C Director Norwood Jewell says the United Auto Workers Union wants to end the two-tier wage system at the Detroit 3. That system pays some new hires much less than veteran UAW members at Chrysler, Ford, and General Motors. Jewell told reporters in Flint, Michigan that the UAW hates the two-tier system and will work to get rid of it. New hires under the two-tier system now hire in at just under $16 an hour. That wage can rise to $19 over time, while veteran UAW members make about $28 an hour. Roughly 16% of GM's 51,000 UAW members make that lower wage. At Ford, it's about 19%, and at Chrysler, it's close to 25%. The UAW will be in contract talks with the Detroit 3 in 2015. Nancy Becker is an American working for Amazon in Germany. She traveled to Seattle recently to dare Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos to try working as a picker in an Amazon warehouse for just a single week. She doesn't think he could survive it because the work is physically demanding and wages are low. These workers, known as pickers, pick out the merchandise ordered by Amazon customers for shipment. Amazon workers in Germany have been striking over the low pay and working conditions. Nancy Becker came to Seattle, Amazon's world headquarters, to participate in rallies driving home the point that while Bezos, other executives, and Amazon shareholders are getting rich, Amazon workers are suffering. Becker says the Amazon system is characterized by low wages and permanent performance pressures. The National Institute on Retirement Security says blacks and Latinos in the United States own shockingly little assets for their retirements. In a recent report, the Institute says 62% of black American workers and 69% of Latino workers own no assets in retirement accounts. The report also notes that 3 out of 4 black households and 4 out of 5 Latino households, ages 25 to 64, have less than $10,000 in retirement savings. 1 out of 2 white households have less than $10,000 in retirement savings. In a different study, the Economic Policy Institute found that the American retirement system simply doesn't work for most workers and underscores the importance of preserving and strengthening Social Security and also defending the remaining defined benefit private pensions.
Workers Independent News is brought to you with support from union-owned and represented Bank of Labor, member FDIC, equal opportunity lender. Bank of Labor offers a business Visa card with no annual fee and points earned with every purchase, as well as rental vehicle and travel accident insurance. More info online at bankoflabor.com.
Don't be afraid. Fight for what you believe to be right. We deserve more. We're worth more.
McDonald's is making $5.5 billion off of profits last year. Arby's made $1.5 billion off of profits last year. So why is we getting all these low minimum wage jobs? We sit up in a poor neighborhood trying to survive. Enough is enough. We're tired. It's time to rise up.
Keep the voices of workers and their unions on the National Radio News airwaves every day. Support Workers Independent News right now by donating at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You are listening to KSKQ. Programming on KSKQ 89.5 FM is made possible in part by a grant from the Carpenter Foundation. The Carpenter Foundation is committed to adding choice, opportunity, inclusiveness, enrichment, and a climate for change for those in the Rogue Valley. Learn more at carpenterfoundation.org. KSKQ thanks the Carpenter Foundation and listeners like you for supporting community radio.
Mr. Postman, look and see.
Okay, Mr. Postman there. Good introduction. Probably recognize that's the Beatles, folks. Have in the studio right now some letter carriers. It's a great honor to have them here in our KSKQ studio. I'd like to introduce to you right now Denise Brooks and Richard Strom. Good morning, you guys.
Good morning.
Good morning, Wes.
Well, thanks for being here in this cold morning, coming over from, I think you live over in the Medford area. Long time here in the Valley. I'm going to, maybe that's true or not. I want to ask for our listeners, I'd like to get to know you. We'd all would a little bit. Let's start with you, Denise. Would you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I transferred up to the Rogue Valley in 1987 in February as a letter carrier.
Okay.
And I worked as a letter carrier until the day I retired here in Medford and in the Medford area. And I am currently still the branch president of our local branch 1433 National Association of Letter Carriers. And I've held that position since, I want to say about 1991. So.
Wow, fantastic. Okay, got some questions to ask you back on that. But first, Richard, a little bit about yourself.
I've lived in the Valley for close to 30 years. I've been carrying and delivering mail for nearly 20 of those 30 years. Prior to that, I worked in a variety of jobs in the field of education. I actually worked for a business college that went belly up about the time I started with the post office, and I decided, well, I'd rather work for something a little more stable that, you know, I think I can make a career out of. And quite frankly, I'm starting to wonder about that now with the future of the Postal Service. But I really enjoy my job. I know we're talking about letter carriers here. A lot of people use the term mailman or postperson even. The same thing. We're the people that walk down your street and put the mail in your box. There's a lot about the job that most people don't know. I guess that's one of the reasons we're here today, and I'd like to thank you, Wes, for having us on.
Fantastic. Most people don't know much about the United States Postal Service. I think there's a lot of people, maybe even some of us elderly like myself, probably what they know most about started when they were kids collecting stamps. I find myself, you guys, in this world today looking at stamps I was collecting back in the 60s and into the 70s, and then, you know, grew up and kind of got away from doing that. I learned so much about the world geographically and just in so many ways that I look back at those stamp albums and I didn't know where I was going to come from. I surprised myself bringing this up, but I'll bet you hear that from other folks too. Or is there any stories about, we're going to dig into the Postal Service, but just stamps in general, stamp collectors, any stories about that? I'm not the only one who probably has something to say. What do you think? Either of you?
Well, I did a program for a long time down in California when I carried down there before I came up. And that was, especially at Christmas time, Toys for Tots, that type of that type of thing. We had a barrel out there, and we started kids on stamp collecting. We'd get stamp collecting kits, and people would buy them across the counter. The employees would buy them, and we would put them in tubs. And they were easily portable, especially for foster children that had to go from one home to another. It wasn't like something that would be difficult for them to move from one place to another. So it was something that they could always pack around and carry, and they had memories. You know, you did stamp collecting. If you were really into space, you collected space stamps, that kind of thing.
I did.
And so
I did.
They bring
How'd
back
you know?
They bring back memories, these different collections. So it wasn't just a stamp, it was a memory.
You say letter carriers, and I find that most people really don't understand about the different groups of people. They have unions who work for the United States Postal Service. So I found myself the other day telling people about this. Letter carriers, postmen, mailmen, postpersons. Let's talk about the different branches of the United States Postal Service. Can you help us with that, Richard? Most people don't know.
Well, and then there's the term postal worker, which may or may not have connotations, we hope positive. Letter carriers are generally the people who deliver the mail, the parcels, the express mail, anything that's, basically outside of the plant. We're the last mile of the whole delivery process. Postal workers in general, there are also clerks, and they have a separate union, the American Postal Workers Union, and they're generally the people that work inside the plants and inside the offices. You see somebody in a uniform at a postal retail counter in a post office, that is a clerk. That's not a letter carrier. There's also a group called mail handlers, and they basically work the docks and the entry-level positions. When I say entry-level, I mean the mail entry. As it comes into the processing plant, they handle the big quantities and containers of mail and do the initial sort of them. It's passed on to clerks who these days run some very impressive sorting equipment, sorting machines that run at high speeds all through the night. And once that process is done, a lot of the mail is actually sorted right to the street delivery order. And it's given to the carriers in the morning. The carriers also sort some of their own mail before going out on the street. Most of them start fairly early in the morning, between, I'd say, about 7 and 9 o'clock. Work an hour or so in the office and then take it all out to the street. That's basically the breakdown.
You know, so my experience, letter carriers are in an urban setting. People you see walking around and delivering door-to-door the mail. They walk up to our front door over on Garfield Street. Got a little letter slot there. They poke the mail through it. If it's a package, it gets left out outside the door. Now, in the rural area, see lots of little white trucks, and they stop at all the... These are also letter carriers driving the trucks? No.
Actually, there's a rural division of the delivery crew, and they're just known as rural carriers. They have a separate union as well, but most of the time these unions try to work together to promote the good of the entire service. The rural carriers generally in the past have been considered to be the routes outside of city limits and outside of the densely populated areas. Rural carriers tend to drive miles and miles a day. And yes, they do use the little white trucks. In the past, a lot of them used their own vehicles, but it's been moving more and more toward the postal branded trucks for them.
Very interesting. Well, it proves a point, and I think I know some things about unions, but there's something new right there. So in rural Oregon, where we are, I guess outside of the metropolis of Medford, right? Jackson and Josephine County, particularly, I guess, Klamath Lake County, some of these Curry County, the rural counties, it's going to be this other union, you said rural...
Actually, we have city carriers in Ashland, Medford, White City, Central Point, Klamath Falls.
In the cities.
Grants Pass, yeah, all those cities. It's really just the smaller towns and the areas outside of them. Some of the smaller towns have post offices where most of the people that live close by go to the post office to pick up their mail at a post office box. And then if you live outside of the town, again, it would be the rural carriers.
Okay, folks, we're talking to Richard Strom and Denise Brooks today, letter carriers here in Southern Oregon. We're learning, hope we're learning, about the United States Postal Service under attack these days, and let's talk about that. There's a lot of myth out there, and most people, like myself, don't know that much about the United States Postal Service. So let's start on the big picture. I hear all kinds of things like, we don't need letters anymore, we got the internet, and some crazy things if you listen to Rush Limbaugh. But at any rate, Denise, any thoughts on what's the situation in the United States Postal Service? People don't like it, do they?
People love the United States Postal Service. There are some people that are trying to dismantle the Postal Service, but that's because you're talking a lot of money. A lot of money in the Postal Service, without counting the prepayment of the retiree health benefits 75 years into the future. Last quarter, the Postal Service made $600 million. In this economy, we came out $600 million ahead. Okay, so we're starting to pick back up again. Yes, the internet is coming on. Yes, the first class mail, the letters that you used to send out, the bills are going down. But the package and the delivery services have been increasing a lot. Because I don't know about you, but I know a lot of the Christmas shopping that I did was over the internet. And they've been delivering packages to my home and Christmas cards. So, and here's another thing that will never, ever be able to be replaced. You can't save an e-card, okay? Somebody sends you an e-card for, say, sympathy. Something horrible happens into your life and somebody sends you an e-card. That's not the same as somebody taking the time to open up a card, write you a special message that's just for you, and put it in the mail. I have cards from when I was a young girl and a teenager. I have a letter from my mother who passed away when she was only 56 years old.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, these are things, you can't save that on an e-card, or you can print out an email, but it doesn't have your mother's own little personal handwriting, you know, and her signature, Love Mom. You know, it's all block letters.
Very good points. Well, I see the post office when I go into it here in Ashland. Usually there's a line. Quite often it's out the doors into the lobby area. I'm not kidding you, not just right now before Christmas. I see the post office as a very busy place, and it looks to me like more people need hired. We don't need to get rid of people. It's very, very popular. I just got to say, what I see by going to the local post office and what I hear, nobody uses the post office anymore. They don't line up at all.
That's not true. There's a lot of people that use the post office. As a matter of fact, if you compare the prices with our competitors, the Postal Service is quite a bit cheaper than our competitors. We also deliver the last mile. That means that if a business, say Amazon or Kohl's or any of the big department stores, they send out, you order something online, they send a package. They may send it with one of our competitors, but that last mile that's delivered, 9 times out of 10, is delivered by a letter carrier from the United States Postal Service, whether that be a rural letter carrier or a city letter carrier. So when you're paying that, these big businesses, when they're paying for these delivery charges, they're paying our competitors' rates that also include the Postal Service rates.
It doesn't take
a rocket scientist to figure out they're paying quite a bit more to have that delivered than if they were handled straight through the Postal Service. And so we're starting to garner more of that business. Amazon.com right now is
The big news we heard.
Yeah, 900 different postal installations across the United States. We're currently not one of them locally, but 900 they're testing. Amazon is doing no mailing except for through the United States Postal Service, and it's doing very, very well. It's doing very well. We have the delivery tracking. And our people go, the difference between the United States Postal Service and other businesses is our letter carriers go to every door every day. Other delivery services do not. Okay. So when you look at all of this, all these attacks on the Postal Service to try to dismantle it, what they're looking at is dismantling those sections that are really profitable. Large cities, New York City, Los Angeles, Portland, Oregon. Your big businesses, the competitors, would like to take over that business because there's a lot of money involved.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, what's going to happen is those outlying areas, say in Eastern Oregon, are still, because of our mandate for universal service, the government is going to have to pick that up. So our taxes are going to start to pay for that. Because you don't make any money off of those little offices. You make it off the big ones. Stretched Across, we're a nonprofit organization, so therefore everybody pays the same. No one's treated differently.
We were talking a little bit before the show got started about there's the big picture here. There's some philosophical differences at play here when we're talking about the Postal Service. It's actually some of the same forces out there who don't believe there should be public education. Some of the same forces out there really don't believe that everything in the world is for sale. Is one way of saying it. Let's talk about that for a minute, because isn't there a big force that doesn't want a U.S. Postal Service at all? What do you think, Richard?
Yeah, I would agree. I think there are individuals, forces, if you will, that see the money involved and think that they can turn it to their own profit if they turn it private. You know, it doesn't seem like a very good idea to me. For one thing, the Postal Service was established, the U.S. Post Office was actually established before the U.S. government. It was like 1775, I think they appointed Ben Franklin as the first postmaster.
Okay.
So it's an institution that's been around for a long time. Another thing that is enshrined in federal law is something called the Universal Service Obligation. The Postal Service, as Denise just said, is obligated to go to every address every delivery day. You might recall about a week and a half ago we had a pretty good storm in this area.
Oh boy.
Laid a lot of snow down, and we were talking about that on the way in this morning too. Apparently none of the post offices that we're aware of curtailed delivery that day. They sent the carriers out, they put chains on the vehicle, they went through the snow. I even saw some pictures on Facebook of the poor carriers out there braving the elements, but they did. Now a private business wouldn't feel like that was necessary. And I won't name the other delivery service, but I know I did notice a scheduled delivery earlier last week that was listed for 3 days straight as what they called weather delay. I don't know what that meant because I didn't have any trouble getting in and out of the residence, but it was obvious that they didn't feel like they had to go there. Now, if all you're interested in is profit, you're going to deliver the major downtown areas where the population is dense and you don't have to travel too far. You're going to deliver on the nice, you know, days, maybe not the days when it's 20 degrees and snowing, and maybe not the days when it's 110 degrees out. It's not going to work for the general public, and I think what we really need to keep a focus on is that this is an institution that benefits everybody, not just the well-to-do.
That's a great point. Rural Oregon particularly. I mean, and rural Oregon's not too far outside of the cities here in the Rogue Valley, really, as we look around. I grew up in, I moved from West Medford when I was a sixth grader and did my grown-up years in Rocky Point up on Upper Klamath Lake. And Harriman Star Route was the postal district over there. In fact, Harriman used to be a post office over there. But as you're talking about, one of the things that stands true in this country is through rain, through snow, through you name it, one of the things that actually happens is the mail does get through. It's an amazing thing that if you, what's the cost of a postal stamp right now?
For 46 cents.
For 46 cents, you put that on an envelope, and you plop it in the mail, and you put an East Coast address on there. 3 or 4 days, that letter is going to be there, and I'll tell you what, I'll bet you right now it is. The odds are pretty good. We, you know, things do get lost in the mail. There's stories you hear every once in a while about something was lost for 47 years and got found, those kinds of things. But I'll tell you what, that's something I'll bet on. And in fact, we can do the odds on it, and over time, I'll make money on it. It's an absolutely amazing thing. Here's something I want to ask. I think in Europe, it costs quite a bit more, doesn't it? What about other places? Don't we even beat out Europe for the cost of a postage stamp?
Yes, we do. And we have the lowest postage anywhere in the free world. That's not taxpayer subsidized. We are totally self-reliant on that postage. So that little stamp that you put on pays everybody's salary and keeps the mail moving.
Let's repeat that one. I don't think most people know
that. There is no taxpayer dollars that support the Postal Service. None whatsoever.
It pays for itself.
It pays for itself.
So that brings us right up. You mentioned earlier about funding this health care. The new crisis, let's talk about this in reality. There's no crisis in the post office. What is the problem that's been made up right now, folks? Can you explain it a little in more details about this funding?
Yeah. Well, in 2006, Congress passed a law that was supposed to ease up some of the regulations that were hamstringing the Postal Service. Unfortunately, in the middle of the night, they inserted a provision into this law that requires the Postal Service to pre-fund retirement health care costs and pre-fund them for a period of 75 years into the future. In other words, Postal Service is supposed to set up a fund where they have all the money that they need for the next 75 years for their retirees, and they wanted that fund established and fully funded within 10 years. That amounted at the beginning to about $5.5 billion, that's with a B, per year payment into that one fund.
Wow.
And that has accounted for virtually all of the losses that the Postal Service has written down on paper for the last 5 or 6 years. Now, if you just look at the last year, on paper, they reported a net operating loss of $4.8 billion. But if you remove the part of that that is due to the pre-funding obligation, the Postal Service actually made a profit, an operating profit, on the revenue that they received from stamps and sales of postage after paying all their expenses for driving through the snow and delivering all those letters and packages. The profit should have been about $620 million. Now, that's million with an M. That's a lot less than the $4.8 billion. But it is in the black, not in the red. The reason we see these numbers, the reason we keep hearing the phrase the Postal Service is hemorrhaging cash, is because it's all going to this pre-funding of retirement health care obligations.
Well, that's probably the take-home message for folks today. I think it certainly is for me. If this is new information to you, hang on to this one. It doesn't cost anything for this Postal Service to. It operates by paying the stamps, and the postage pays for it. If it wasn't for this new mandate, there would be no problem at all. Do I got it right?
There has been no taxpayer dollars that have contributed to the Postal Service since approximately 1971.
Wow.
So every time they close a post office, every time they take away the service, it is not to benefit the citizens of the United States, because there are no taxpayer dollars, no taxpayer money going to support the Postal Service. Also, the Postal Service is the largest single employer of United States veterans in all the companies, public companies and private companies, and all of the government. We are the other outside of the military. We are the largest employer of veterans.
Outside of the actual armed services.
That's correct.
The Postal Service employs more vets than any other business or agency. Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
And those vets are good workers, let me tell you.
Wow, wow. Well, that is very, very important. Don't want to go too far out there, but a lot of vets are homeless in this country. We know this. A lot of vets don't get the fair shake they get for serving for this country. So that's an amazing fact. It really, really is. Here in just a little bit, we're going to be joined by Jessica Campbell. She's going to be on the horn with us today. Jessica Campbell's with the Rural Organizing Project. She's up in Scappoose, Oregon, and I know the ROP, that's what they call it, the Rural Organizing Project, have been very supportive of the United States Postal Service and trying to help some education like you folks are today. So that's what I wanted to tell you, is we'll be joined by her and we'll continue this conversation. Pretty interesting today. So what do you see down the road is what needs to be done now? I'll ask you that question. Why don't we do this? Wes, change your mind. Why don't we, let's do another song, Ann Feeney's song. It's a great song, cut number 6 off a Union Made album. It's called We Do the Work. Let's play that right now.
We
do the work, Ann Feeney, and the letter carriers do the work when it comes to the Postal Service, getting those letters and packages out there, having the studio. A great conversation we're having this morning with Richard Strom and Denise Brooks, both letter carriers here in the Rogue Valley, and I think we have her on the horn now. Jessica, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Good morning. Jessica Campbell is with the Rural Organizing Project. And briefly for our listeners, Jessica, help us with the introduction. Tell us a little bit about yourself and ROP.
Sure. So the Rural Organizing Project is basically at its core a network of groups throughout the state that are all working on issues relating to human dignity and inclusive democracy. So we've been working throughout rural Oregon for the last 20 years. I have been working with ROP for about 8 years, 2 years as staff, 5 years as a board member, and I started off in a group in Cottage Grove and was a high school student doing a bunch of organizing in my high school, and that's how I met the Rural Organizing Project.
Okay. Well, listen, we're having a great conversation this morning about the United States Postal Service, and I know that that's one of the areas that ROP has been involved in, and so we want to continue the conversation with Denise and Richard today. And tell us a little bit about ROP's work with saving the United States Postal Service. Tell us your perspective on it, please.
Sure. Well, before I launch into it, have we already talked about the pre-funding mandate?
What? Yes. Oh, yes, yes. In fact, we've zeroed in on the fact that Postal Service pays for itself if it wasn't for this new mandate, Jessica. Yes.
Wonderful. Okay, so I don't even have to go there. That makes my job so much easier. So basically, the Rural Organizing Project has been organizing really steadily on this for 2 years now. And the reason why it's been about 2 years is that's when the funding mandate really forced the Postal Service's hand to make cuts. Or some hypothesize that maybe the Postal Service was trying to enrage rural communities and to force Congress's hand to maybe repeal this pre-funding. But it trickled down to they wanted to close thousands of post offices in rural America across the country. And what it looked like in Oregon is we had 43 post offices on an immediate closure list. We first started participating in it because two gentlemen had called us from Western Lane County, from the communities of Deadwood and Swiss Home. They have populations less than 300. Deadwood had a general store. Swiss Home had a general store going in and out of business, and the postal office branch. And those were literally the only publicly accessible buildings in their community left. They used to have schools. They used to have libraries. All had crumbled. All they have is their post office and maybe the general store. So they called us saying, we can't lose the last thing we have left in our community. We cannot. And they had done everything that they thought that they could do. They talked to their senators. They talked to their representatives. They talked to every organization they could think of. And the ACLU of Lane County referred them on to ROP saying, all you really have left are grassroots organizing strategies. So they called us, and it was in the peak of the Occupy fever, and they said, well, what if we occupied our post offices? So we said, hey, that sounds like fun. Let's try it. And what it trickled down to was Monday, December 19th, 2 years ago, 23 communities occupied their post offices.
Wow.
And most of those communities were populations less than 600, less than 500. So they were extremely rural, extremely small communities. And we had a petition to Congress saying, basically, Congress, you made this mess. You fix it. Repeal the pre-funding mandate. Save our post office. And we collected just over 1,800 signatures that day alone, which means the majority of every community showed up for these rallies. It was really incredible to see. And the playing field has really changed recently. It has gone from immediate closures to a slower process through what's called the post plan. And what that's looking like is there's actually 124 post offices in Oregon that were originally on this list. For hours cuts, service cuts, their postmaster would be cut. They would be replaced with someone who's not a union member. They weren't even going to get benefits for a while there. Now they have vacation and sick days, finally. And what it would ultimately look like is these post offices would be reevaluated to see whether or not they are making a profit, which no post office in Oregon makes a profit, not even the ones in Portland, not in Eugene. No post office in Oregon makes a profit. So if these post offices don't make a profit after their hours have been cut and after a career postmaster is cut, then they can be closed.
Whoa.
So we've been organizing around that because communities are saying, hell no, we don't need cuts. We need expanded service. We want to see seven-day delivery. We need our post office open all day so we could get to our boxes. Why not have them open 24/7? And beyond that, we've actually seen communities, as I described before, that have lost their libraries, lost their schools, and so they're using the lobby of their post office as a library. And so there's that value added to the community that the Postal Service doesn't even know about. I mean, but these communities are willing to fight and are going to fight. This is the last bit of government access that they have, and they're not going to let go of it.
Okay, wow. Well, Jessica, thank you for the perspective, and that does come from looking at rural Oregon, working with communities that are very much rural here in Oregon. You know, Richard and Denise, I'm thinking it was a couple of years ago, I can't remember exactly when it was, but we had a very successful rally over in Talent, Oregon, at the post office over there, pretty good crowd, and the same attacks that Jessica's talking about were playing out right here locally. What I remember about Talent, and folks, if you're outside of the area, Talent is a very much a retirement kind of a community. A lot of elderly folks live in the urban area of Talent, Oregon, and I guess it jumped out how popular the Talent post office was based on people who showed up there. That was a couple of years ago. You guys might have heard about that. Talk to us a little bit about here, your perspective here in the Rogue Valley about these post offices. Do you think any of them are, well, on the chopping block? How do you see it? What do you think? That's part of the question. And then the other part is, what can we do, listeners out here, to support the post offices? So let's talk about it in both aspects. Do you think any of them are particularly vulnerable? And then what can we do to help?
I think if Congress has its way, they're all going to be vulnerable, especially Darrell Issa. Okay, with all, yeah, ooh, especially with the bills that he keeps bringing forward. I think they're all vulnerable. Jessica said, no post office in the state of Oregon makes money. But the way the Postal Service as a whole operates is they pretty much went on a three-year budget before the pre-funding all came into play. The first year they made a lot of money, the second year they broke even, the third year they lost money, but overall the three years combined, it all worked out.
And then they'd have another rate hike. Right?
And of course people would scream because it would be a penny or 2 cents. I'm screaming more at the gas pump than I am about the stamps.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But in any case, before this pre-funding went, that's the way it went. It's because we're, like I said, nonprofit. No taxpayer dollars go to support us. I can't stress that enough. So it was across the United States. So there was no 1% or 99%. We're all treated equally, all United States citizens. We all got our mail delivered to the door, despite the fact that our personal little post office wasn't making money when, say, New York City was making a ton. Okay, we spread the wealth, in other words, across the United States, because it's a public service. And I think that a lot of people don't understand this. This, when they think public service, they think big government is trying to tell me what to do, et cetera, et cetera. This is a classic example of where the government is actually doing something for you, provided you a service that benefits everybody across the United States equally.
What about small businesses? That's what makes up this part of Oregon. This is not...
It'll destroy them.
Huh?
It'll destroy them. You got to understand your small businesses are going to end up having to pay more, okay, for any type of delivery services that they're going to have. If we close our post offices locally, say they end up privatizing them, those small businesses are going to have to pay more for those same services that they were getting for considerably less. And it will probably literally destroy a lot of them, because a lot of them are hanging on, you know, and especially in this economy, they're starting to build back up again. But they're no, you know, Bill Gates or, you know, Warren Buffett. That's not, they're small businesses. So I know it's kind of an extreme example, but they're small businesses. So they're making it. But in making it, it's also because of how they run their costs and using local delivery services for free. Richard mentioned back when Ben Franklin was the first postmaster.
Yeah.
Back then, you had to pay to receive mail. Okay.
Oh.
Yes, that's how the stamps work. You paid on one end to send it, and you paid to receive it too. So we don't have that, but technically, a lot of your the other delivery services, technically, that's what you're paying for. You're paying all of it the same thing because they're making a profit. We're not making a profit. They have CEOs and board of directors that they have to answer to. We don't. We have a board of governors that we have to answer to.
Okay.
That's bad. But we don't have a CEO who's making more and more profits. Okay, that a board of governors has to do. So it's equal across the way. So if you're looking at little post offices here, yeah, I think they all have the potential to be on the chopping block. Every last one of them.
Wow.
Probably Medford Installation would probably, if I had to guess, if Congress has, a lot of the members of Congress have their way, Medford would probably hang around for a while because we're at the southern end of the state, just as Portland's at the northern end, to process the mail. But the other little post offices around, it would not surprise me if they went, if Congress gets its way.
I'd like to ask all three of you, Jessica, who's on the phone with us today, and we'll start with her. We've got seven, eight minutes left here for the show. Not a lot of time left. But Jessica, from what you're seeing around Oregon, and same question really for you folks here locally, what is it that people can do? How can they connect? What are your ideas about getting behind the United States Postal Service and saving something that's pretty important to most of us? Your thoughts, Jessica.
Sure. So I think one of the things that unfortunately gets missed is we're talking about all of our mail being seriously impacted, because it's not just post offices that are being closed or cut. It's also mail processing centers. For example, you know, just Monday we had a huge rally at the Springfield Mail Processing Center that's slated to close in February, where we were really bringing rural folks together with urban folks to talk about, you know, community with labor, to talk about the fact that all of our mail is going to be drastically slower. And we've seen that. The Salem plant in Oregon already closed. The folks from Corvallis came down to speak to the fact that, you know, they're not getting checks in the mail as quickly as they used to, and it's impacting their budgets, their family budgets, and what they can do for Christmas this year. It's
sure.
impacting businesses. It's impacting newspapers, small newspapers. And we had folks in Springfield speak to the fact that they are mailers out of Springfield, and how these mailing companies, these printing and mailing companies, are all going to go extinct in everywhere but Portland. And that's really scary to have that only available in Portland. So in terms of what folks can do, now with the context that everyone is going to be impacted, We are in a moment where Congress is at a standstill on this. There are bills proposed by Peter DeFazio that are great, that we should move forward on. What we've been demanding and what we've seen real success with across the country in demanding is that our Congress people meet directly with Donahoe, with Postmaster General Donahoe, to say, we care about our post office, we care about our mail processing centers, you need to do something about this now. And we are seeing that those mail processing centers are getting taken off the list. So that is our demand. DeFazio, Wyden, Walden, Merkley, Bonamici, all of you guys, talk to Donahoe and tell him that your constituency is on fire about this right now, and we don't want to see any cuts or any closures in a time where we need our postal service now more than ever.
Okay, well, that's, I just learned something. The postmaster is, his name is Donahoe, and that's one thing that, Jason, you and I can do, is we can get a hold of our congressman and request him to get a hold of Donahoe and speak in our behalf. We value the Postal Service. That sounds like a pretty good call out. Locally here, any other ideas? Education's a big part of it, and thanks for helping us with this today, both of you. Denise or Richard, any thoughts on what people can do to help out?
Well, just off the top of my head, I agree with Jessica. We need to contact our Congress people. Greg Walden here in Southern Oregon, I've spoken with him, I've called him, I've written letters. It never hurts to do it two or three times, because I think sometimes they're slow to get the word. Also, the more people you can talk to and convince them to contact Congress, the more it will help. Have them, you know, confront Postmaster General Patrick Donahoe. Ask the Congress people to reverse the pre-funding mandate in legislation. Ask them to support Peter DeFazio's bill. One other thing, there's a great website for more information if you want to stay informed. It's called SaveThePostalService.com. Real easy to remember, SaveThePostalService.com. It's got a wealth of information and some links on there for more information.
Very good. Let's, Jason, if we can, let's include that in the archive for today's show. Any other things you would like to add to that, Denise?
I just think that you need to talk to your neighbors, you need to talk to your family members. Everybody needs to spread the word that this is something that Congress is pushing. Just if you ignore it and you don't pay any attention, you don't contact your congressman, you don't get the people involved, grassroots efforts like Jessica mentioned, it's going to happen and you're going to lose it and it's going to be too late. And there, it's the mail processing facilities are going to go, a lot of your good paying jobs are going to go. That affects the community as a whole. When you have more people who are unemployed, who are no longer contributing to support the local economy, not to mention the fact that your family members aren't going to get their mail delivered to their door anymore. That's another thing that's on the table, door delivery, no more door delivery.
You bring up a very important point. It's really what this show is about, the education of it all. I think just a couple real key points I've learned today are about this the funding of the Postal Service. Let's repeat that. It pays for itself. Is that right?
That's correct. It pays for itself. Your little stamp you put on there, that pays for itself.
And if we were to reverse this pre-funding mandate that we've been talking about, or at least come up with a different plan for it, there's no problem at all with the post office. Is that right?
There would be no post offices that needed to be closed. There would be no employees that needed to be let go. We would be completely... Our retirement is funded. Okay, so it's the understand, 75 years in the future, you're continuing to pay each year, too. So there is no problem. You got rid of the pre-funding, there would be no need to close any post offices.
Okay, with that, we are going to have to say goodbye. I think we're looking at a song to go out on. You guys ever heard of Solidarity Forever?
My favorite.
My favorite.
It's my favorite, too.
Hey, Jessica Campbell with the Rural Organizing Project, thank you so much for being on the horn with us today and adding your perspective. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Denise Brooks and Richard Strom, thanks for the work you do as letter carriers and your continued work as you're retired. This is very important to people. Thanks for being our guest today on the Brain Labor Report.
Thank you for having us.
Yes. Thanks, Wes. Solidarity. It's been a lot of fun.
All right. Well, with that, we will say goodbye. Next Wednesday is Christmas. We'll have a pre-recorded show for you then, and so we'll be talking to you next year, 2014. Thanks for listening to the Brain Labor Report. Bye-bye, everybody.
When the union's inspiration through the workers' blood shall run.